Why do people start to smoke cigarettes? 50 years ago, smoking was seen as glamorous, sophisticated, sexy. Humphrey Bogart, anybody? Well, Humphrey Bogart died of lung cancer, and smoking kills about 400,000 Americans every year. At the same time, it gets harder and harder to smoke in any place other than your car or your home. It's banned in almost every office and in many restaurants and bars. Even so, 47 million people in the U.S. still smoke cigarettes. 9 out of 10 of them report that they started before the age of 18. And of course, we all know it's very tough to quit. An article published this month in the journal Pediatrics says that the number of PG-13 rated movies, those films geared for younger audiences, which have characters who smoke, has outnumbered R-rated movies with smoking in them over the past 3 years. It goes on to say that exposure to smoking in the movies increases smoking among teens. We'll talk with the author of the article about that. We'll also hear an opposing view. And, of course, we want to hear from you. If you ever smoked, if you smoke now, why did you start? How old were you? 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Later, a satirical look at the seemingly endless things in life that could potentially harm kids. And as the president continues his series of speeches on victory in Iraq, we'll take a look at the images in the background. But first, that first cigarette. Joining us now from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco is Stanton Glantz. He's a professor of medicine and director of the Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education at the University of California at San Francisco. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Your article looked at the results of 42 other studies and came to some remarkable conclusions. First, that there's just as much smoking in the movies today as there was when Humphrey Bogart was a star back in 1950.
That's right. The amount of smoking in the movies gradually declined through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and in about 1990 started to increase rapidly. And if you look at the number of times you see smoking per hour of running time in movies, it's actually a little bit higher than it was back in 1950. In 1950, almost half the population smoked. Today, it's down to about 22%.
Mm-hmm. So it's you would argue that it's out of proportion to what's going on in the population.
Yeah, I mean, a kid going to a movie is going to think smoking is as socially normative a behavior today as he would have in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ways that smoking in the movies exerts such a powerful effect on teenagers. It's probably, if not the most important influence on kids smoking today, it's certainly one of the most important influences.
What qualifies as smoking in that study that you looked at? Is it actually the physical act of taking a puff on a cigarette or just showing an ashtray?
Well, in the one you're referring to, and as you mentioned, there's a quite large literature in this area now.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually a study we did, and we counted any actual smoking display of a cigarette package, an ashtray, displaying a tobacco billboard in the background. But the great bulk of it was actually seeing people smoking.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's important is it doesn't really matter if it's the good guy or the bad guy smoking. The good guy and the bad guy smoking appeal to different segments of youth, but the overall effect seems to be pretty much the same. The kids who see a lot of smoking in the movies are about 3 times more likely to start smoking than the kids who don't see a lot of smoking in the movies. And it's such a powerful effect that can actually kind of neutralize the effects of good parental role modeling.
Mm-hmm. How do we know? How can you make that connection between kids who see something that they, you know, up on the big screen there and start smoking?
Well, again, the paper we published was a synthesis of 42 other papers. And
mm-hmm.
you begin with the sort of the exposure studies we were talking about, psychological studies of how kids perceive the smoking. But when you get down to coming up with these numbers, there are several large-scale epidemiological studies that have followed several thousand kids who weren't smoking when they entered the study at age 10 to 14. You follow them for a couple of years. You assess whether their friends smoke, whether their parents smoke, their exposure to cigarette marketing, how they're doing in school, their race, their gender, and then ask them what movies they've seen. Then you take the list of movies they've seen and go back and add up the exposure that you get in the movies through the other kind of study. And when you do this, you get what doctors call a dose-response relationship. The more smoking in the movies the kids see, the more likely they are to smoke, even after you adjust for and take into account all of these other factors, which are known to be related to smoking also. And even after you do that, you end up with the movies. The current best estimate is that about 52% of the youth initiation is attributed to the smoking in the movies.
Really?
Yes.
It's not peer pressure? It's not...
The peer pressure is included in these models. If peer pressure is an important effect, but as I said, they measure whether their parents smoke, whether their siblings smoke, whether their friends smoke, and those are measures of so-called peer pressure. But it's also important to understand that the peer pressure, people are not born smokers. The peer pressure is actually manufactured through several things. The smoking in the movies helps create it. Cigarette advertising and promotional activities help create the peer pressure. And so in the models that have been used, the epidemiological studies, peer pressure has been treated as an independent factor and adjusted out. But actually, that's probably leading to an underestimate of the effect of the movies, because the movies themselves affect perceptions of peer pressure.
And you've suggested two remedies, one of which is to include anti-smoking messages in that package of material that everybody sees before the movie starts.
Yes.
And the other is if movies include smoking references, they shouldn't be rated G or PG. They should be rated R.
That's correct. If the first recommendation, which is based on good scientific evidence that seeing an anti-smoking ad before a movie tends to neutralize the pro-tobacco influence without affecting whether or not kids like the movie. And just recently, 32 state attorney generals wrote to studios urging them to include that on the DVDs they distribute and other times in the theaters. And the purpose of the R rating proposal is quite simple, and that is, movies are products that are made to be sold and marketed to specific audiences, and the most coveted rating for most films is PG-13, because mm-hmm. the studios want to market to those teenagers. And what we're saying to the studios is, if you want to put a product out there to market to teenagers, it shouldn't have smoking in it. If you look at, say, the movie Men in Black or Men in Black 2, where Steven Spielberg put some Marlboro promos in both of them, Spielberg would have the choice. If he thinks it's artistically crucial to have those Marlboro promos in his in Men in Black and Men in Black 2, he could have it, just as he could use the F word or show a naked body. He just gets an R rating. If he wants the movie to be sold to kids, then he makes the gag some other way. All we're essentially asking for is that the studios treat smoking, which is an addictive product that kills people, the same way they treat using the F word. The rule for the F word is, if you use it, you get an R rating.
Okay, and that aside, I'm not sure that Steven Spielberg was responsible for either.
Steven Spielberg was the producer.
Steven
Spielberg controlled the film.
Okay, all right. Stanley Glantz, thanks very much. Stanton Glantz, excuse me. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Stanton Glantz is a professor of medicine and director of the Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education at the University of California at San Francisco, and joined us today from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. For another view, we go to Jacob Sullum, a senior editor at Reason Magazine and author of For Your Own Good, The Anti-Smoking Crusade and the Tyranny of Public Health. And he's with us by phone from his office in Fairfax, Virginia. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
I know you've been listening to our conversation with Stanton Glantz, and I know you take issue with his conclusions.
Well, I think you have to be careful in evaluating these studies of teenagers and smoking in the movies, because basically what you're seeing is a correlation between watching the sorts of movies that tend to have a lot of smoking in them, which already tend to be R-rated movies and tend to be movies with more mature, more adult themes, and the propensity to smoke. So the question is, what is different about the kids who tend to see a lot of those movies? Are they different from the kids who don't in a way that might make them more likely to smoke, independent of whether the movies themselves actually have that effect? And it's basically impossible to control for all of the possible differences between these two groups of kids, all the differences in environment and personality that make one group of kids more likely to see these movies to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that there is no effect at all by the movies. It's just not practical in this sort of study to control for every possible variable, where you can conclude that the association actually represents a cause and effect relationship. And if you look at the magnitude of the association they're talking about, it's simply implausible that smoking in the movies has that kind of impact. Stan Glantz was talking about a 52% of smoking, attributing 52% of smoking to smoking in the movies. And he said that might even be an underestimate. Well, that's 52%. He says 34% of smoking is caused by advertising. So already you're up to, what, 86% of smoking is caused by either movie smoking or advertising. That leaves very little room for every other variable in life, including how you're raised and what your friends do and what your values are and what your personality is and what your genes are and every other aspect of culture aside from advertising and the movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just completely implausible to me that you would see that kind of effect. Not to say there's no effect at all, but it's just, it's very implausible it's that big.
Whatever the effect is, and even if it is less than Stanton Glantz says it is, what about the remedy? What's so bad about putting an R rating on it if you want to have smoking in a movie, like using the F word, as he said, or a graphic violence, equivalent R rating, and it may be an anti-smoking message, too?
Well, I think that, I mean, this is obviously a judgment call as to what you find offensive. And I think that's the bottom line here, is that people find it offensive that smoking is portrayed in movies. They don't like smoking and they don't want it to be portrayed. They don't think people ought to be smoking. If you think that, you know, as a parent, this is just as objectionable as the other kinds of things that qualify a movie for an R rating, you know, that's up to the Motion Picture Association of America and the parents who advise it to determine that. I don't personally really care very much if my kids see movies that happen to have people smoking in them, and I get uncomfortable, certainly if we're talking about a government mandate for anti-smoking ads or the sorts of economic pressure that he's talking about. Exerted through the ratings to basically discourage depictions of smoking, even in movies where artistically it makes sense. And by the way, he mentioned that the prevalence of smoking in the movies is relatively high. In fact, it doesn't appear to be any higher than smoking is in the actual population. If you look at this study that was recently published in the journal Chest, they looked at the most popular movies during the last decade or so, and what they found is that the frequency of smoking was no greater than it actually is in real life. So in that sense, the movies are reflecting real-life behavior.
Dueling studies, but I think everybody concludes that smoking is bad for you. Nobody argues that point. Jacob Sullum, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jacob Sullum, at Reason Magazine, author of For Your Own Good, The Anti-Smoking Crusade and the Tyranny of Public Health, and he joined us from his office in Fairfax, Virginia. When we come back from a short break, why do people start smoking? Hey, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about why people start smoking. If you ever smoked, if you smoke now, why did you light that first cigarette? Did you know it was bad for you? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And well, let's take a call. This is Josh. Josh calling us from Salt Lake City.
Hey, how's it going today?
Very well. How are you?
Good. Hey, I was just calling to say... I started smoking to impress a girl, actually.
Uh-huh.
And that girl's actually now my wife.
So it worked.
Yeah, but the trade-off is I've been a smoker for 10 years now, so.
Does your wife smoke?
She does not. So, ironically, the one thing I use to impress her is the one thing she's very unimpressed with.
And probably less and less impressed with as time goes on.
Yes, exactly.
How old were you when you started?
18.
18.
Yeah.
So it's been a tough row after that to get off the stuff.
Absolutely. It's very difficult. I think that's one thing people sometimes forget is how much the smoker themselves actually struggles with what they're doing. So,
Josh, good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Dr. Nora Volkoff, Director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse. It's part of the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. And Dr. Volkoff, nice to have you here on Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon. It's nice to be here.
And we just heard from that caller from Salt Lake City, 18 years old, did it to impress a girl. Is that a common reason? Or we've been talking earlier about influence of movies and, I guess, other media. Why do people start to smoke?
There are many reasons why people start to smoke, but certainly one of them is to try to emulate behaviors of adults, and that's where the whole issue about the portrayal of people smoking in movies can be very appealing to adolescents. But there are factors that relate to the person itself, their family, their school, and their community that determine whether someone will experiment with drugs or not. So it's not just one factor that leads to you wanting to take smoking. Smoking usually happens in adolescence. 90% of smokers started smoking before age 18. And at that stage, adolescents are very much prone to experimentation. They are curious. And one of the things that they may want to experiment is cigarette smoking. The question then is, what happens to those that start smoking? And what we know is that a significant percent of them, 30%, continues to be regular smokers and becomes addicted. And that's where the question is, what determines that?
Mm-hmm.
So the main reason why kids start to smoke is they want to experiment. They see other kids doing it. They see their parents doing it. They see it in the movies. And they do, even though they know that it can cause cancer, they really do not comprehend what that ultimately means. It's just too far away.
Mm-hmm.
There's another aspect that we need to recognize also, that the kids that are greatest risk of starting to smoke are those that are having problems at school, are those that are having problems with their families, are those that may have an underlying unrecognized behavioral or psychiatric disorder.
Here's an email we got from Liz in Albany, California. I was 11 years old growing up in Princeton, New Jersey, and it was 1969. The student protests against Vietnam were heating up. The university was shut down. I wanted to be part of what felt like a powerful moment in history, hanging out on the campus, often in groups, in conversation with college-age and high school-age kids. Holding a cigarette made me looking older, serious, and smart. Go figure. That seems to be, your argument that people start smoking not necessarily to impress their age group, but to look older, look like grown-ups.
Yeah, and think about it. You want to emulate. You want to appear mature. For a boy, it may be being more able to take care of a girl. For a girl, it may be to be seen as sexier, to be seen as more appealing. So that's one of the trends that they look towards, and that's one of the arguments about why it's definitively deleterious to portray smoking as an appealing image, particularly as it's seen by a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. George with us from Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Good evening, Neil.
Good evening.
I grew up in a real small rural community in eastern North Carolina. We raised tobacco. And when I was old enough, we started putting in tobacco, and all the men in my family smoked. And I can remember curing tobacco when I was like 8 or 10 years old and thinking how wonderful it smelled.
Hmm.
I just couldn't wait to start smoking. And I probably had my first cigarette when I was 10 or 12 years old, and then I quit. And when I went to high school, all of the men went over to a smoking area during the break in the morning at lunch and then a break in the afternoon. And the principal went, the teachers went, the boys went, the girls went to the bathroom and smoked, but all of the men went out and smoked. And I associate it with a relaxing experience. For me, it's a time to relax. I've been smoking about 50 years, and at some point in time, I would smoke two packs a day when I was stressed, but now I usually have one after lunch and then one before dinner and maybe two after dinner. Four a day is about my limit now.
Mm-hmm.
But I associate it with a relaxing experience, and it's something I enjoy. My wife smokes, and she smokes about three or four a day also.
I went to school in northern Connecticut where they smoke, they grow tobacco for wrapping cigars. It's not the same as cigarette tobacco, but I'll agree with you. It just smells terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Volkoff, hanging out with younger men, hanging out with older men, doing the same thing, relaxing, all of those things are really a part of it, I guess.
Yes, indeed. And cigarette smoking is pleasurable. It contains nicotine. And we know that nicotine is a chemical, a compound that animals will self-administer and humans report it to be very pleasant. Also, you have to realize that nicotine, we know that the reason why it's pleasurable is it activates a chemical in the brain called dopamine. And what this dopamine system does, it makes your environment very salient. So yes, when you are smoking, everyday activities appear to be more pleasurable. It's not just that the cigarette itself is pleasurable. What surrounds it becomes more appealing. And that's one of the reasons why then it becomes so extraordinarily difficult to separate the smoking from the environment where you had it. And like this gentleman that just called, he would associate that smoking with that period of relaxation, with being with friends. So then it's not just he seeks that cigarette per se, but he seeks capturing of that moment. And that becomes a very powerful drive in motivating you to continue to smoke cigarettes.
George, good luck to you.
Thank you, Neil.
Appreciate the phone call. Let's talk now with Karen, and Karen Zithis on the line from Ionia in Michigan.
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
I started smoking back in Catholic school. I unfortunately was a very rebellious teenager, and smoking was cool. And, you know, our priest smoked, my mother smoked, and all her friends smoked. And it's funny because there's six of us in the family, and three smoke, three don't. I have done everything to quit smoking. I've quit many times over the years, and I sneak them every now and then. And I work for community health, so believe me, being a Catholic, working for community health with this guilt complex, even sneaking a cigarette, wears on me. It's the intellect versus emotional. I know all the facts. My mother died of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Terrible, terrible death. And even at that, it's very difficult to not want to smoke. I've been to a not smoking camp even.
did the priest who smoked, did your mother say, don't do it, it's bad for you?
Oh, yes, she always said that.
And it didn't have much effect, I guess.
On three of us, it did, but the other three, it didn't. We still all struggle. But as far as the movies, you know, if they're going to take cigarettes out, then take the alcohol out too, because I look at that as bad it's equally bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worse to me, and nobody seems to be stirring up too much about that. So I try not to say too much. My son owns a tavern, so you know, we're pretty complicated here, but. It's a terrible, terrible addiction, and I was very young, and it's hung with me far too long.
Well, Karen, good luck next time.
Thank you very much.
All right, appreciate it, Dr. Volkoff. There are ads now that try to, you know, obviously rebellion is a part of it, and there are ads that try to direct, you know, to say the real rebellion is to not smoke. Do those work?
Yes, but let me just make a point to the other caller, and I'll get back to your question. And the notion is very important, illustrated by this case, and why do some people under the same environment, same family, end up smoking and others not? And that highlights the importance of differences in genetics and vulnerability among individuals, both to initiate the smoking as well as to become addicted.
Mm-hmm.
As for the ads that actually promote this rebellious attitude, exemplified by smoking, well, that's a message that's going to definitively resonate in certain type of kids. And remember, adolescent is that period that you want to learn new things, that where danger by itself may be reinforcing. So the notion and the message of don't smoke because it's dangerous by itself may have a counterproductive effect in an adolescent that has those characteristics of rebelliousness. And we need to be very aware of it, because we need to target messages for kids, which actually, when targeted properly, have been shown to be very effective in preventing smoking in young individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but some ads these days, anti-smoking ads, say, you know, stick it to the man, don't smoke. They're trying to get you to smoke.
Well, I would feel uncomfortable to tell to you that particular ad works in general, because I do not have precisely the data to say one way or the other. In our experience, based on research, what appears to be actually being the most effective ads, anti-smoking ads, are those ones that have engaged the adolescents themselves to help them develop them, such that they are the ones that are able to put up the messages that they think will make the most impact. Research has shown that those are the most effective.
Here's an email we got from Dave. I started smoking when I was around 12. My neighbor friends were experimenting and got me started. These are the same kids who were playing with matches in the hay barn and told me that was okay because it was just play matches, not real ones. 3 days later, their barn burned down. Unfortunately, 30 years later, I'm still smoking.
Yes, and I think that it's unfortunate that it is, I mean, he reflects what we are also seeing too. He started very young, at age 12. And what studies now know is that they've shown that the earlier you start smoking, the greater the likelihood that you will have a long life problem with smoking. That is to say, it would be harder to stop the addiction the earlier you start.
Mm-hmm. And is it associated also, we've been finding out more about adolescents and their willingness to adopt risk behaviors because of the way their brain is wired?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, it is always what precedes and what follows. And indeed, it has been shown that adolescents that start smoking early on will engage, have a higher likelihood of engaging in risky behaviors, including the abuse of illegal substances. For example, early use of cigarettes is associated with a sixfold higher likelihood of smoking marijuana than if you had not started smoking earlier. Now, the question is, of course, what does that mean? Does that mean that that individual had a specific genetic characteristic that led him or her to start smoking earlier, but it would have been the same trajectory to later on go into taking drugs? Or is the early exposure to cigarettes during a stage of development where the brain is not fully formed that could produce plastic changes that then account for these other behavioral problems that these kids will engage on later in life? And so at this point, we do not know whether there is a causal effect or it just reflects a common precedent that makes the individual vulnerable for both.
We're talking about why people light up that first cigarette. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Michelle. Michelle with us from Whitmore Lake in Michigan.
Hi. I actually started smoking because I was a waitress. And when you have a table, a group of tables you're responsible for, they won't give you a break at work. At least back when I was 16 years old, they wouldn't. And so the only way that I could, you know, go put my feet up for 10 minutes, I couldn't say to another waitress, hey, my feet hurt, I'm going to put them up for 10 minutes, can you watch my tables? They would call me lazy. So instead, if I said, hey, I'm going to go take a smoke for 10 minutes, I could go put my feet up and take a break. Unfortunately, I ended up quitting waitressing at the age of 19 and was stuck with the habit, which I was able to kick about a month before I met my future husband, who probably would not have stayed with me if I had been a smoker.
I wonder, Michelle, that first cigarette, it tastes terrible.
Oh, it was horrible. But I was quite quickly addicted. And I do think that that I was, you know, like meant to become addicted very quickly because there were other people who could only smoke at work and they could smoke on their breaks and they were fine, whereas I was quite addicted very quickly.
Dr. Volkoff, are there some jobs that are more, obviously not many of us of the 47 million who still smoke started with waitressing?
Yes, and I think she points up an aspect, too, that it is, when I said factors that influence you taking certain cigarette smoking, is your environment. If you're in an environment where you're going to be exposed to other smokers, you are at greater risk. In this case, the circumstances appear to be a break to actually have some time to rest. But it comes to mind, for example, the bartender that's exposed to not only the fact that they are constantly observing other smoking, but the fact that they are gaining secondary passive nicotine, which could then lead them to actually become a higher likelihood of becoming addicted. So there's that other element, pharmacological element, about the risk of being in certain professions.
Michelle, ever tempted to go back?
I had one small rebound, you know, step backward about 2 years after I quit when I was about 21. And but since I'm now 37 and I would never even dream of smoking, so I was able to fully kick the habit. But I must say that I switched to caffeine.
Okay. Michelle, thanks very much for the call. Stay clean, will you?
Bye-bye.
Here's an email we got from John. I started my sophomore year in college as a tactic to stay awake to study German for a final, where I was failing. I failed anyway, but continued to smoke for 14 years, but gave up on noon, October 18th, 1974. These are moments that people tend to remember when they quit, as well as those moments when they fired up that first cigarette. Dr. Nora Volkoff, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Volkoff is director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, which is part of the National Institutes of Health, and she was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. One more smoking story after a short break. This one about how a children's book illustrator quit smoking posthumously. Plus the White House and Image Control, all on Talk of the Nation after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. It is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.